You're listening to a download from theoutdoorstation.co.uk. Number 468.
So Friedrichshafen this year was the last time outdoor was at Friedrichshafen, the well-known place in Europe where all the trade and industry get together to show and share their wares and look at exciting new developments. Of course, our European correspondent, Roman Ackle, was there for us again this year. And I should imagine, Roman, it was sad times if this was the last time the outdoor show is going to be at Friedrichshafen before it moves to Munich.
It truly was. You know, it was a mixture. You know, there was a lot of nostalgia in the rooms, in the halls, and you could feel people were sad of leaving Friedrichshafen. It has its challenges, you know, in terms of getting there, and prices for accommodation are steep for such a small city. On the other hand, you know, it's a lovely place at a big lake close to the mountains in Switzerland. So it really kind of mirrors the outdoor topic. But, well, the decision has been made, and next year it will be a totally different show in a big city.
Now, I know, obviously, you're fairly close to Munich itself and the area there where they have exhibitions. What sort of atmosphere can people expect when it goes to Munich? Is it much more intense and urban?
Well, for sure it's much more urban. The current fair centre was a former airport of Munich, so it's a large area. And they already have an outdoor-related show. It's called the ISPO, which is more focused on winter gear. So they have some experience on running those shows. And the question everybody has had at the outdoor show this year was what concept they will be coming up with. You know, will they open the show more to the public? Will they keep it as a strict business-to-business show as it is right now? So it will be interesting, but it will be definitely a different feeling. There will be no campgrounds near the fair or anything similar.
And now, what about last couple of years? They've welcomed in the social media enthusiasts, bloggers, before they welcomed in the sort of general public. Were they as welcome again this year?
Yep. Yeah. They still had that outdoor bloggers network there, which had speakers and got special treatment. So that was still there. I think it's growing, actually, in terms of how those things are published to, let's say, the wider audience, where you see, you know, traditional media was, I think, not as present as it has been in the previous years. And I spoke with Chris Townsend during the show. He said, you know, what's the point on, you know, having a magazine like TGO, print magazine, report on those new items which are presented at those shows when you get the same information almost instantly through social media?
Now, you've been there with us and for us for probably the last 5-6 years, I suppose, and you've seen trends like we have change with an interest towards the lighter perspective or more colourful or more technical equipment. Mm-hmm. So what were the trends that you noticed specifically this year?
I think one trend continues, and it's getting even bigger. It's all around eco and sustainability. So you could see almost every big manufacturer putting something up or how ecologically conscious their products are, to a certain level, obviously. You know, so some are taking it very serious and for long years, like companies like Patagonia, for example. Some are relatively new into that, but it seems to be on the mindset of everybody. So that is a common theme. Interestingly, lightweight, which was a theme in the previous years, was not very prominent this year. So I would not say this is a trend. You know, when you looked at the booths from the various manufacturers, people do not really highlight it. Did not really highlight the lightweight products. Another trend which you could see is and continuing to see is what they call what I call urban outdoors. You know, it's kind of bringing the outdoor into a more urban environment. You know, with more focus on fashion instead of functionality. So you could still observe that trend, and it's kind of two micro trends, I would say, compared to previous years. You could see that a lot more shoe manufacturers use mesh in their shoes, so not focus on offering only waterproof, breathable shoes. And I would say that kind of relates to the fact that trail running and approach shoes and those kind of shoes becoming more and more popular. And they always have now also a mesh version of their bigger models available. And another trend you could sense to a certain extent was bike packing. You know, this is an outdoor show and it focused on bicycles, but the bike packing trend was prominent at a few manufacturers. For example, Big Agnes, which is a large tent manufacturer in the US, they kind of released two of their tents, which are especially made for bike packing. So they have shorter poles, so you could fit those tents on your handlebar of your bicycle and use that for bike packing.
Well, that's an interesting development. I've certainly noticed quite a few cyclists contacting us for camping equipment, and that is the first question they ask, is how short the poles can be folded down to. So that's good that Big Agnes has taken the lead on that. The other thing that I noticed 2-3 years ago, and they were getting quite serious about this, and obviously we've seen the development and the popularity of things like AliExpress with the Chinese copying, is that a lot of the major brands and manufacturers were actually policing their stands quite strongly and stopping anybody that appeared to be from the Asian manufacturing group or market from approaching the stand and taking detailed pictures of their equipment. Did you notice much of that activity at all?
To a certain extent, I would say, especially at the hall where they put up all the tents. The tent city, they call it, you know, photography was not allowed at all, but that was the same in previous years. At the booth, you know, I usually ask if I'm allowed to take photos. I had no issues, and I haven't seen that Asians have been, disencouraged from taking photos. So not so much of a fact there, but I've seen quite a few Asians going around and looking at the materials used and the designs and so on of those products presented. Yeah. There are a few copycats around.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. So actually, let's now start coming on and talking about some of the items. Now, you sent me a handful of images that to kick us off, as it were, from each area that we're going to talk about. And I think we'll start by talking about the sleeping system, sleeping pads, and anything that you saw there that you felt was worth discussing. I would think it'd be fair to just remind people that we're probably more interested in the general lighter items and simpler items. But I'll hand over to you and you tell me what you think you'd like to mention about the sleeping systems.
Well, I think one of the most prominent examples, which also got a lot of coverage on social media, was a new pad from Thermarest in the Neo Air series. It's called the Uberlight. It will only weigh 250 grams in the full length, so this is super lightweight. But it comes with a downside of an R value of 2.0, so it will only be suitable for let's say summer hikes, late spring, very early autumn. So it's a limited temperature range you can use it, but you know, super light, but also super thin material, so you need to baby that. But if you're into lightweight, that's for sure a pad to consider.
I'm looking at the photograph you sent me now. Am I right in thinking the foil reflective sheet isn't inside that one?
Yes, that's what they said. And if you actually put it against the light, you can almost see through.
Wow, okay. And there is another comment that people say sometimes about the Neo Airs, that they can be a bit noisy, a bit squeaky on sort of ground sheets. Have they changed the material, the surface material, or did it feel to be similar to the other products but obviously slightly thinner?
Well, I think, you know, people have different opinions how noisy that is. I think it depends on how sensible they are. I could not see a difference, so it sounded to me very similar to the existing Neo Airs. There was not a lot of difference.
Okay, and I can see that when it's packed down, it's about the same diameter as a bottle of beer.
Exactly. So super, super small pack size and super lightweight, as I said. You know, price point will, for the end consumer, will probably be 150 euros for one. So it's a it's an investment.
It is, isn't it? It's not cheap. But it does come with lifetime warranty, doesn't it?
They were not really clear at the booth. And it was printed on there, it's a limited lifetime warranty. So I'm curious what that will mean.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Anything else in the sleeping section?
Well, they also released a down quilt. It's called the Vespa. I mean, Summer has released them. And it's 900 fill power down quilt, you know, good to minus six, 539 grams, they said. So basically, you know, if you can put a sleeping system together for roughly 800 grams, yeah, which is good to minus six, which is fairly good from a lightweight perspective, I would say.
Sure. And was the shape of the quilt the same as their previous quilts, the Alpine and the Vela, with a little box section, or is it one of the ones that you can adjust top and bottom?
No, it was kind of a more simplified version. So you have had the normal quilt design, which you can see from other cottage manufacturers like Enlightened Equipment or others, you know, with two or three straps underneath where you can close it. But there was nothing very, very fancy in terms of functionalities.
Now, I see a picture here from Nemo. Have they brought out a new range as well?
Yes, they did not come up with a sleeping bag, at least not something in the lightweight area, but they released a new foam pad, which they called the Switchback, which is the equivalent to the Z-Lite from Summerest, but it's compared to that, it's 1.5 times thicker, almost same weight, 355 grams for the full length, will cost about 50 euros when it's released. So it's more comfy than a Vet Light, they claimed that, with the same dimensions. So if you are into foam pads, that might be a good alternative.
Anything else on the sleeping sections?
No, I think from a lightweight perspective, that's what I found most interesting.
Okay, let's move over to PAX then. PAX is always a good one to talk about. I see there's quite a few pictures here from XBED, from Black Diamond, I think it is, and somebody else I'm not too sure of. Ultimate Direction. Who are Ultimate Direction?
Ultimate Direction are trail runner, are specialized on trail running. So this is kind of a large trail running pack, which you can also obviously adopt for ultralight hiking. I believe that's a sponsor which gave input for the design of that pack. It's a Scrum pack. So that looked interesting because it has a higher load capacity compared to the traditional trail running packs, which are, you know, fairly shallow in terms of capacity. So that could be something for those, let's say, fast and light weekend trips. If you don't have a lot of stuff you want to carry with you,
is that about a 35 liter pack? Is it
25? I would say 25.
25. Okay. Yeah. And what sort of money were we talking about for the for that one?
They were not clear on the price point.
Okay. Okay. What else? What else took your eye in the pack section?
XBED, as you already mentioned, they will come up with a pack called Whiteout. It's made from DCF, Dyneema Composite, which is formerly known as Cuban Fiber. So it's a laminate fabric with a DCF and a durable surface attached to it. You've probably seen that in other packs, like from the cottage companies, like Hyperlite Mountain Gear, for example, previously. So they adopted that material. It's a very clean pack. I mean, it's probably not totally focused on the hikers. It's because it doesn't have, let's say, side pockets or front pocket. Actually, it has no pockets on the outside. Roll top closure. I think it's more aimed to climbers, but nevertheless, you know, they have it in 45 and 55 liter versions, fully taped seams, so they say it's waterproof. And, you know, the weight is for the 45 liter, 765 grams, and 825 for the 55 liter, which is, fairly good. You know, they have a small pad incorporated into it as a back panel, and you know, if you look for a really minimalistic design, that could be your choice.
It doesn't look like it's got an adjustable back system, but the bottom of the shoulder harness looks like it unclips. So does the shoulder harness completely unclip so you could use it for as a carry-on bag on a plane, do you think?
It probably looks like it, but the shoulder harness is sewn to the pack itself, so it doesn't unclip.
Looking at it, though, it's fairly thin, the shoulder harness, so it wouldn't take a massive amount of weight. But there again, as you say, ideal for a lightweight waterproof pack, even for possibly, I dare say, urban commuting, if you've got things you want to keep dry, I guess. Cycling and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
What about Mont Bell? I see Mont Bell as a name that's appeared here. What have you got from them?
Yeah, they have a new pack called the Altiplano. So it's a 30-liter bag, you know, 730 grams. Also roll top closure, and it's also waterproof. But they are achieving that not through taping the seams, but incorporating a waterproof liner into it. So it's a different approach, and it's more aimed to hikers because it has some external pockets as well. So that might be intriguing for some, because I think Mont Bell also will have a distributor soon in the UK, which they haven't had for quite a few years. So that stuff will be available for UK customers coming very soon.
I notice on the Mont Bell pack that, as you say, it's got side pockets and a lightweight compression system, but it's also got two decent size chest pockets sewn in to the shoulder harness, as well as hip belt pockets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. And I think that's something which is probably also coming with the influence from the cottage companies. You probably, I'm not sure if you heard about a company called Palante Packs. They're now very famous for ultralight packs. You know, they have those type of pockets, which are stretch pockets sewn into the shoulder straps. And they also have which is not incorporated here in the Mont Bell pack, but they also have a bottom pocket where you could shuffle things into the bottom of the pack while you walk.
And do you have an approximate price on the Altiplano?
On the Altiplano? Nope. Didn't release anything on that one as well. But knowing it is Mont Bell, it might be at the more higher segment.
Yeah, yeah. I see what it's 730 grams, so it's quite respectable, though.
Yeah.
Anything else on the rucksack department?
No, not from a lightweight perspective. You know, last year, you probably remember Osprey came out with two super lightweight packs, but they did not go further or refine those packs for the next year.
No, I think those packs haven't been as popular as they thought they might be. And looking at the design, they don't really look like they're going to carry much weight very comfortably. Actually,
that's it's an interesting design. Let me put it that way. And I'm not sure if it really offers a lot of advantages to the already available ultralight packs through smaller manufacturers.
This podcast is brought to you by backpackinglight.co.uk, a small UK independent helping you save weight and enjoy outdoor life more.
Okay, let's move on to shelters then, tents. Always a nice one to see what innovations have taken place. And I see there's two or three products here that you've sent me that look quite interesting. Let's start, and actually it's also noticeable that several of them and I think you'll probably correct me if I'm wrong, but there's several of them are single skin with sewn in mesh. So they're reducing the inners as well as the weight factor as well. So let's start with Vaude, because they obviously got a new product there.
Yeah. They call their new tent, it's a space super ultralight SUL dome tent, which is not actually super ultralight because it weighs 1.4 kilograms for two persons, which is not super ultralight. But nevertheless, what is interesting was in terms of construction methods that they use to not saw the seams anymore, but bond them, which obviously, you know, makes it more tear resistant, and also you don't need to seam seal anything anymore. Yeah. So that's why I think it's an interesting design, even though it's not super lightweight.
So they've taken something from the Cuban fiber market then, and if they're just gluing the seams rather than sewing them?
It's a polyester. They glue the bonds of polyester together, so it's not Cuban. But, you know, normally they stitch the seams, but I think it's the first time they use that technology on a tent.
And did it look fairly substantial?
Yeah, it did. And they had some tests where you can test the tear resistance, and you could not pull it apart, by hand at least.
And are they still supporting their other Power Lizard range, or have they changed the whole manufacturing to use the siliconized bonding?
No, that is the first tent they introduced that. So they did not change the construction methods of the other tents that already existed.
Now, I notice Black Diamond have come into the market using walking poles with a slight attachment to present a shelter. Mm-hmm. This seems to be a common thing now. People are now considering the walking poles, very much as you say, like the cottage manufacturers have been doing for a while. So tell me about this triangular tent from wedge-shaped tent from Black Diamond.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they call it the distance shelter, two-person tent as well. You know, they will come up with a distinct set of poles which will fit that shelter, because what it essentially means, you have your two poles, and you have kind of a connecting bar between the two poles, and you know, the poles they will make have two holes or one hole at the grips of the trekking poles to accommodate that connecting piece. And for those people that want to use the existing trekking poles, they will come up with kind of an adapter which will fit to the handlebars of the trekking poles. Yeah. So the good news is, in terms of the shape and form, you could actually sit upright in the tent at one point in time, because, as you said, it's formed like a wedge. But then you have very steep slopes that go down in order to save weight. And I was a little bit questioning how wind-resistant the whole construction will be at the end of the day. So I think there are better designs, to be a little bit more wind-resistant than what they presented. But nevertheless, I think it's interesting that manufacturer like Diamond Equipment, which is not well known for designing and releasing tents, goes into that market segment as well.
And is it a single skin tent again?
Yeah, it's a single skin tent.
Okay, and do we have a weight on it at all?
No, I didn't have the chance, and there was nobody around that knew how much it would weigh.
Okay. Let's move on then. One of my next picture I've got here is Big Agnes, I think, Copper Spur.
Those were the two tents actually I mentioned at the beginning from Big Agnes. It's the Copper Spur and the Fly Creek. Those are existing tents already, but they modified, as I said, the poles for, making the section shorter to make them suitable for bike packing. Plus, they added an additional storage area in the inner tent because they think if you do bike packing, you might have more stuff with you. You want to put into your tent. Plus, they added kind of a daisy chain on the fly on the outer fly, so you could hang things onto the tent to dry out.
Okay, that's quite a good idea. And also, there's a daisy chain on the packing as well. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a daisy chain on the packing. So the idea is you have one compact package which you can directly attach to the handlebar of your bicycle then.
I can imagine that being popular.
Yeah.
Okay, and moving along here, what about the Nemo? Nemo, I notice.
Yeah. Nemo released a tent. It's called the Rocket. Also a two-person tent, and they label it the lightest livable shelter on the market. 621 grams, which is light. And the price point this time will be roughly a little bit below 500 euros. It's an interesting construction. If when you check the outdoor station webpage, you will see that it differs a little bit from the usual setup. Found it interesting, and as they said, sometimes with those lightweight shelters, you have a little bit like the feeling to lay in a coffin. You don't want to really stay there for a long time, but that was actually much larger for the given weight compared to other shelters.
Okay, well, looking at it, it's sort of an A-frame shelter that would normally be supported by two walking poles or two poles either end of the sleeping area. But I noticed, looking at the photograph, there's a single pole in the middle which goes up to almost a T-section that goes across the top. Now, is that T-section dividing the roof section directly in half, or is it slightly offset? Because it looks like it's at an angle on the picture.
That's probably the way I did take the photograph. So it's not offset, okay. But you have a pole, and you can probably use your tracking pole as well to connect that to and make that T-frame construction. And you have something which I think Top Tent introduced in their tents. Those little short pole sections at the end of the bathtub floor, which will increase the height and give you more livable space there.
Yeah, definitely. I can see the four poles there on each corner. It reminds me very much of Tarp Tent. But that looks like an interesting one. Again, single skin with a sewn-in mesh.
Yeah.
And we've got the price. Do we have you said a weight about 600 grams. That's quite good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to bivvies now. I see Outdoor Research have brought out a Stargazer bivvy. What's the story on this one?
Yeah, so the Stargazer bivvy is supposed to be a super breathable bivvy. So they label it the most breathable bivvy on the market. They couldn't give me any kind of test results. But they assured me it's super breathable. They didn't give me any weights, but as I said, I've spoken with Chris Townsend on the show, and he was impressed. If you're into bivvies, he said that might be a good choice to buy that next year. And he will surely test that for TGO magazine.
I can see the weight. It's printed on the bottom of one of the photographs. It says with the pole, it's 524 grams. Without the pole, 466, which actually is only fractionally lighter than the Nemo tent.
Exactly. And then you have a bivvy tent compared to a true tent, right? So you have to think twice.
Yeah. Okay. And we've talked about the rocket, haven't we? Yeah, I can see the other picture of it there. That's looks a bit... It looks quite an interesting tent, actually, but not cheap, though, €499.
Yeah. Nope.
Okay, let's move on to our next favourite subject, which is going to have to be cooking, I guess. I've got nothing in the photographs here, so do tell me what you found.
I found a new stove from MSR. They call it the Pocket Rocket Deluxe. So it's like, if you're familiar with the Soto Windmaster, it's a gas cartridge stove, and it almost looks identical to the Soto Windmaster, weighs 83 grams. So if you're more into, wanting to have a gas cartridge stove, which you don't need to shield from the wind so much, that might be your choice. Even though I don't find that very ingenious to come up with a very similar design to an already existing product, but, each for his own, I would say. What I found interesting was a product from a company called Soto, which is called the ThermoStack. And what they thought about is to combine, actually, two cups, which you can either use independently or stack together, which will then form a double wall insulated mug, with a 350 mil capacity, and they also add a pot cozy to the system. Yeah.
So how would you use that practically? I found the picture of it. How would you use that practically?
Yeah, so you have basically two cups. One is stainless steel, one is titanium. And you can have a lid for those two either independently or for one. And then you put those, you can stack those two together, put a lid on covering both of them, and then you have in between that air gap, which will then function as an isolation wall, you know, like you have in a normal double wall mug, which you can buy. But you know, here you have two independent things which you can use independently if you want to, and you can make that isolation thing out of it.
Okay. I can't see the practical advantage of doing that with the, and then those two items go in the larger pot. If you're drinking, you're drinking out of a mug, whether it's a single skin or double skin, and if you're cooking, you're cooking in a pot. I can't see the point of having three.
Well, it's two. It's two. You can stake those two together, and then you have the insulation capacity.
Oh, I see. Okay. What else we got on the cooking front? Anything?
No, nothing.
Okay.
well, you know, you have the big companies like C2 Summit who are ever expanding their cooking gear, and MSR. I think they added a few new pots as well, but it's just like, you know, enlarging what they currently have on offer. So nothing new or nothing very ingenious, to say so.
Okay. Right. Okay. Let us move on then to clothing. Now, it's always interesting to see the European colours that appear when I'm over in Friedrichshafen, something you'd never see in the high street in England, but seem very popular your side of the water. So yeah. What have you got on the clothing front that would interest us?
A Swedish company called Fjällräven, they came up with hiking tights. Actually, they released them last year, and I'm not sure if a lot of listeners will be into hiking in tights, but they said to me that has been proven one of the more popular products, and it's super comfortable, and they will release something which they call the Abisko Trail Tights next year, which is even lighter than their existing model. And as I said, you know, you have a slight compression effect, and it is super super comfortable. You have a slight water repellency as well in this. Obviously, you know, it's very stretchy, as you would imagine from a tight. So if you don't feel you look too outrageous wearing those, that can be a product which is interesting for you.
Well, I don't know about you, Roman, but I've got the legs for tights, so I'm happy wearing them. And I know that the Montane Trail tights have been very, very popular, a lightweight tight. But I notice, again, looking at the pictures, Fjällräven have done their usual thing of putting too many pockets on stuff. And they've got pockets on tights on just above the knee, which is exactly where it'll put the weight and pull the tight down. So, once again, I do wonder about the practicalities of their designs.
Well, I think it depends on the purpose of your hike, right?
Oh, yeah, I guess so. Now, there's a women's Tachyon pants.
Yes, the Tachyon pants. It's from Montbel. It's a wind pant, basically. It's from a 7 denier nylon material. You know, it's super lightweight, obviously. They already had the Tachyon jacket, wind jacket, and now they add those pants. Black Diamond also came up with a wind jacket. They call it the Distance wind jacket. And that's even made from a 5 denier nylon. You know, it's hard to imagine how thin that is. You know, it's translucent, no doubt about it. And even for me, you know, who likes lightweight gear, you know, the question remains, you know, does it go what the US calls stupid light? You know, because it's not, it's by no means any it's by no means durable, and you could even argue, you know, with 5 denier material, will it be windproof enough to fulfill the main purpose of a wind jacket, right? But you know, for hood with that distance jacket with a hood and a full zipper, you know, it weighs 60 grams.
Wow. It reminds me of the Emperor's New Clothes, though.
Yeah.
if it's see-through. Okay, I see you've got an interesting hat here. Where did that hat come from? The airflow?
The airflow, yes, from Tille. They will release that because, you know, it will weigh probably less than 70 grams, which is pretty light. And obviously the benefit of Tille is they manufacture it according to your head circumference. So it will be a good fit. Has a good reputation for being long-lasting, and you get a lifetime warranty on those things. And I'm pretty sure you get it in a different color than the blue shown on the picture.
Right. Well, I've got Tille hats. Rose has got Tille hats as well. And yes, they do. They last forever, and they've been extremely useful as for hiking hats generally when the weather's been like it has been at the moment. Mm-hmm. Okay, then let's move on to any other subject really in the miscellaneous section. I can see we've got mm-hmm. pictures of walking poles here, and what's that? Is that a watch or something? No, oh, a buckle, a whistle buckle. So yeah, let's start with the walking pole.
Yeah, let's start with the walking pole. Well, you have the two major contenders as usual. You have Leki and Compadel, which are obviously the main competitors in that market. Both released two new full carbon trekking poles. You know, one extends to 130 centimeters, the other one to 135. You know, they weigh 400 and 440 gram per pair. So lightweight, super lightweight. Not, they are probably lighter weights, but you know, they put a focus on stability, so they increase the diameter of the poles, especially in the lower sections. Leki worked on the adjustment system as well to make that a little bit more durable and sturdier. And they even won a prize at the Outdoor Show for that model. Moving the world, what they release here, but still, you know, if you're looking into carbon tracking poles, that might be those two to be released ones might be worthwhile to consider.
Okay, yeah, as you say, I mean, Leki are fairly safe as regards their pole design, and they just tend to improve the design slowly over a long period of time. They don't generally come out with anything too new and exciting, do they?
Yeah. True, and Compadel, you know, I've talked to them last year when they introduced the carbon poles with an alloy section at the bottom end, and they said, yeah, well, you know, they used an alloy section at the bottom end because they had returns of the full carbon poles because they tend to break at the lower end. Now they release a full carbon pole, so I asked them, you know, why do you move back? And so, well, you know, we focus on the lightweight and we increase the diameter so they will not break. We will see.
Yeah, absolutely. I noticed you've got a few interesting pictures of footwear. As you say, at last they're starting to get rid of waterproof trainers, which seem a ridiculous idea. Scott, a bit too colourful for me, but the Scott design trainer looks quite good.
Yeah, the trainer caught my interest because it incorporates a new material from Scheller, which is a big textile manufacturer based in Switzerland. And it's not mesh, but it's super breathable and lightweight. You know, I tried the shoes on in the show. You know, they were a bit, to my foot, they were a bit tight, you know, a very low-profile shoe. But nevertheless, you know, very grippy sole, very aggressive sole. Good construction, so it might be well suited for some trail runners or hikers with low weight on their back. Plus, as I said at the beginning, you know, you could see through all the manufacturers that they start to offer the option of a mesh or non-Gore-Tex shoe in their range now.
Yes, I'm just looking at the picture of the poster, and they said it's an 8mm drop, and it's a very aggressive sole, isn't it? Very aggressive. Supertrack Ultra RC. Do we have any prices on that at all, or weights?
Not out of my head. I haven't noted it down.
Okay. Oh, here we are. Approximate weight, 340 grams. Price, approximately 160 euros. It's getting more expensive now to buy trainers than it is to buy boots.
Yeah, and usually they last like maybe 400 or 500 miles, and then they're done.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, looking now at the interesting idea you got here, the whistle buckle. What's the whistle buckle all about?
Well, it's a sternum strap with an incorporated whistle, and you might say, doesn't that exist? And it does, and it has been around for quite a long time. But the whistle, at least from my opinion, was always very awful, not very loud and hard to use. So a company called Duraflex came up with a new design, which you can see on the photos on the outdoor station, which, first of all, the whistle works and it's loud now. And I think it's a sleeker design compared to what we have right now.
Yeah, I think
so. For those people that want to have something like that and want to exchange their sternum strap, that might be something to look into.
Yes, I think I agree with you. There's less likelihood of this, of the whistle part catching on anything or standing on it almost when you put your bag down. Now, there's a photograph of a green piece of material here, which doesn't look particularly exciting. Is there some story attached to that?
It's a towel. It's a super light towel from C2 Summit. So even in a large size, large means, 45 by 108 centimeters, it only weighs 48 grams. And it's called the Airlight. So if you're carrying a towel, and I got one, I tried it out myself after the show. So it absorbs the water as good as a Cerberus towel, for example, and it's lighter and it dries almost instantly. You wring it out and it's almost dry. It's amazing.
Okay, Rowan, well, thanks very much indeed for going to the show. It sounds like you had a flying visit and raced round it in your usual very efficient German fashion and picked up some interesting ideas there, interesting products.
Yeah, it was an interesting show, but what is always missing, I've talked to a few other visitors, that cottage companies, which we all know and love, they're never present. And obviously they're never present because, they sell to a different market. But, I'm always thinking, why wouldn't we give them kind of a space in one of the large halls to present their products? Yeah. Because you could really see that a lot of the large manufacturers got their ideas for their own products from some of the cottage makers, and it's not such a small number of cottage companies. It's actually, I can easily name 50, 60, 70 cottage companies in various areas. So it's a sizable chunk. For me, it would be beneficial for a show like this, maybe have an innovation area or whatever they call it, to give those companies a place where they can show and market their products.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. Exposure would be good, but certainly the financial aspect for a cottage company, generally, they don't tend to have the margins in their products to allow for that second tier of distribution. So as much as they would probably A, be precious about their designs and concept, and B, concerned that if they were advertising their services or advertising their products at a show like this, that, as I say, unfortunately, the Asian market would, be on them very quickly to copy ideas, and also they don't really have the budgets or the margins in the products themselves to allow for distributors.
Yeah, well, fully agree in the fact that, in terms of distribution, they will always rely on a direct sell model to their customers without going through distribution. In terms of the copying, I think nothing prevents the Chinese from copying existing products if they are at a show or not. If they want to copy something, they would probably go as far as ordering them and then copy them, right? So you could see a lot of knockoff products from larger company manufacturers like Mountain Laurel Designs, for example, on the Chinese platforms, and you can buy those already. I think that is already existing to a certain degree. I would actually look at it in terms of an investment from those companies that run those shows, to say, we give you kind of a free of charge booth in your only, well, only, but you have to cover your travel expenses, but still, you know, give them kind of an incentive to come. You could see some of the smaller cottage manufacturers from the US, like Northwest Alpine, for example. They come underneath the umbrella of their local chamber of commerce. The local chamber of commerce from the state, you know, gets a booth, and then they invite four or five cottage companies or smaller companies from the state to present there.
Well, Roman, thank you very much again from all of us for taking the time. As usual, very efficient and informative. And obviously, with the next one being in Munich, hopefully that we will attend with you and we can share this stress of running around and seeing what we find.
Looking forward to it. Munich will be different, but interesting.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorsstation.co.uk.